Oh man, come on, Crosspoint. Let's let them hear this. Man, it's some great, great music. Great music from One Republic. I don't know if you ever felt that way. Man, I had the week that came from hell. Anybody had one of those weeks like recently in the last week, month, maybe year? And you're like, yeah, I think I maybe drank too much. Nobody's gonna raise their hand on that, right? But let's be honest. I mean, we've had weeks and months like that, right? And so today, we're gonna take a look at the power of perspective. And so, man, super excited to have you here with us. My name's Kurt. Let's make some noise for those tuning in online with us at YouTube Online. So good to see you guys. We're glad to have you join us at Crosspoint Online on demand. And if it's your first time with us, whether it's here in the room or online, man, we are so excited you're with us. And we hope it's the first time of many times. And we just want you to know that. I tell you what, it is so good to be back with you guys. I have missed you. And how about our speakers this summer? Did you guys enjoy all these speakers that were with us? I tell you what, I tuned in with you guys. Everything from John West to Ann Smith. Anybody enjoy Ann Smith a couple weekends ago? Man, I tell you what, I'm going to talk about her a little more later. We had Scott McDonald, one of our board members, Tom Plank with us a couple times. It's an absolute gift to the Crosspoint community. And then Albert Tate. Who listened to Albert Tate on our on-demand only weekend? Did you guys hear him? Man, I tell you what. Can I tell you a quick story about Albert, just real quick? The first time I heard Albert speak at the Exponential Conference in Chicago, I just had this impression like, I want him to speak to Crosspoint someday. I don't know why, but I just have always really loved his message. And so I reached out to Scott McDonald, one of our board members who does leadership events with him periodically. I said, hey, could you hook me up? And he's like, I checked with his people. He's booked. He can't come out. And so when we got to our virtual weekend, I thought, man, what if we do something really creative where we have him come to us virtually? So I just put a request in with his organization, and they have all these questions, like 20 questions on will you pay for his lodging and will you pay for his airfare, and everything was no. Will you pay for his meals? No. Will you pay for an Uber? No. And I'm like, they're not gonna even get past question 5 because like I'm not looking for him to come in person. So at the very bottom, there's this little section where it says like, if you have something unique about your event, let us know. And I'm like, we wanna do something out of the box. Albert doesn't have to travel here. Would he either, send us one of his messages on how you love matters, or would he, redo it for us or give us a message uniquely to Crosspoint? And I thought it was a long shot. About a week went by, never heard anything. And I'm like, man, God, I just thought this is our moment. And then one day, ding, an email came in and it was his assistant. She said, good news, Albert just accepted your request. And I'm like, surely this isn't gonna happen. Half hour later, I had to stop by the store. I could tell you exactly where I was in Kroger when I got a call from his assistant. And she said, hey, we're going to the studio right now to tape a little greeting for Crosspoint. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is happening. So that was a cool, cool God moment for me. And I hope you were blessed by it. If you have not tuned into that weekend, it was our online weekend only where we gave all of our volunteers and staff a break over 4th of July weekend. The cool thing is it's online as long as you're paying your bill and we're paying our bill. The internet's there. It's going to be there. So make sure you check out Albert Tay on How We Love Matters if you haven't had a chance to do that. Well, today I'm going to wrap this series up, this idea of spark, things that change things. And I'm going to do something a little different than my normal kind of vernacular. I'm going to tell you a story, an experience I had, and it was earlier this spring, and this was very powerful and shaping, not just then, but over the last few months. And my hope really is I think this will probably intersect with a number of our lives and experiences. And I want us to try to see this undeniable connection between how we look at things and what we see, which is what becomes the power of perspective. And my prayer is that God would just use this to maybe spark something in you or in your faith journey, wherever you are on the faith spectrum, whether you're new or pre-faith or you've been doing, following Jesus for years, that perhaps you would get a glimpse of the love of your Heavenly Father's immense love for you and the activity in your life. And whether you even believe that or not, that's my hope. So earlier this year, we spent some time on this framing question in a series in early 2022 called Faith Fuel. And this was the question we kind of opened up with each weekend. What would I do if I woke up every single day absolutely confident that God was actually with me? Like, what would my life look like if I just lived with that belief? And you know people like this. You see people like this. Some of you are people like this. Like, this is what, as we grow in our faith. And I know some of you would say, well, Kurt, you're somebody who kind of lives that way. And I've grown over the years, but let me tell you what, there's a lot of times I wake up and I'm like, man, I wish I could live more confidently. And especially when we have days like this scene I want to show you from the movie Alexander and the horrible, terrible, no good, very bad day where everything just seems to unravel. Take a look at this.
Hey, there's Mama.
Where's my baby Green?
Oh, well, things went a little awry today. Look who it is.
Hey, he's green.
I know.
What is this?
It's Marker. It's fine. How did it go? How's it reading?
It was awful. I think I pretty much flushed my career down the potty.
Why? What happened?
Never mind. Can I have the wipes?
Dad!
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
I told you this day was cursed.
Sorry.
Oh. All right.
Good luck, baby.
Here you go.
Wait, Anthony. Please don't do it today. You're going to fail.
Alexander, give your brother some space, please.
Yeah, the next time you see this face, it's going to be in my driver's license.
It's not coming off.
Just hurry up. I need to get to my plane.
What kind of a person?
It's not poisonous. I don't think it's poisonous.
Hi, I'm Anthony. I'm really
excited. There's two things you need to know. My name is Miss Suggs, and I'll be your driving examiner. Now, you may be the big man on campus out there, but in this minivan, I'm the BMOC. You get me? Now put your hands at 10 and 2 and show me what you can do.
Come on, how you doing?
Tell me something, Anthony. Are you a senior citizen?
No, ma'am.
All right, well, then why are you driving 15 miles an hour in a 25-mile zone? Come on, speed it up.
That's right. That is right. Right.
All right. Okay. Celia's calling.
Oh, it's my girlfriend. Probably wants to start prom plans. Tonight's prom. But I'll just ignore that.
Well, seems like she's very anxious to talk to you.
No, I'm driving. I would never answer the phone when I'm driving.
Yeah.
No matter what circumstance.
But, you know, proms don't happen every day.
It's true. You sure? It'd just be, like, super quick. It's not...
What's important to you is important to me. Right?
Hey, Celia. Yeah, I can't really talk right now, but...
Put the phone down!
What?
Put the mobile device down now!
Oh,
hey, eyes on the road!
No! 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 Tricked me!
Get out of this car.
You get out
You're
of this
evil.
Car!
You prom creep!
I don't think he passed.
Get out! Get out!
I love the movie. I don't think he passed, really. You know, have you had a day like that recently? I mean, where everything just goes from bad to worse, and you know, clearly you can identify moments where you're like, yeah, I certainly contributed to it. I mean, there was things I did that created this moment, and you begin to just realize it's on a downward spiral, and at some point you're like, okay, I don't know what I contributed here. I mean, this all isn't me, I don't think. I mean, I started it, but it's just getting worse, and then it begins to feel like a punishment. It's almost like I think God's mad at me, and God, where are you anywhere, by the way? Have you like abandoned me? Because I'm not seeing you in anything right here, and then you almost get to the place where you're like, okay, I think I'd probably just deserve this. I mean, this was all deserved. I mean, I created something that obviously deserved my day to go like this, right? And, you know, if you're like me, I mean, I've usually been able to navigate difficult days and, you know, kind of find kind of silver linings or bright moments and get out of them. But there was recently, back this spring, a moment where we had a 24-hour period of time where everything just went downhill. In fact, Julie and I, we were away on kind of a three-day weekend. It was one of the holiday weekends early in the spring, and it was a Monday. We were traveling home, catching a flight that afternoon. And we need to leave the pool about 2:30. And I'm gonna be honest, we didn't wanna go home. We were like, oh, we gotta get back to work. And they had a number of challenges in front of each of us. And so we're like, we're just gonna lay at the pool a little longer, a few more minutes. About 3 o'clock, we got ready and started heading to the airport. And between the time we went to the shower and the time we got on the road, the travel time had increased to the airport by about 35, 40 minutes. It was no longer an hour, 15 minute trip. It was now almost 2 hours. And then about every 15 minutes in, the ETA kept getting longer. Before long, it was like 2:15 before we were gonna get to the airport. I'm like, Julie, we're gonna miss this flight. And I started praying like, God, I'm not gonna tell you how to handle this. I just need you to clear a path, whatever that looks like. I don't know if that's like making the traffic. It's like people just kept coming onto the interstate and it kept getting slower and slower. And I don't know if clearing a path was like, clearing the traffic so we could have a clear path to the airport, or it's one of those moments where you don't pray for flight delays, but I was praying for like, God, if that's the way you wanna do this, I'm good with that. And so we get to the airport about 45 minutes before our flight leaves, rush to the counter, put our bag on the scales, and lady, at the counter checks us in. She says, okay, you guys can get on the flight, but that bag is not going with you. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, the door's closed. I mean, the door's closed 50 minutes before the flight. And I'm like, you're serious? She's like, I'm serious. She's like, if you got somebody you can leave that bag with, I mean, you can leave it, but it can't go with you. And I said, I just pleaded with her. I'm like, could you please, we have got to get home, and we don't have time and margin to and money to be paying for extra flights. And I'm like, would you just please make sure the flight's on time, that the baggage door is not still open? And she actually did. She actually went back and then came back and said, yeah, it's shut. The bag can't go. I mean, one of you could go. If one of you wants to go and the other wants to stay with the bag, or if you have somebody to leave the bag with, and I'm like, can you put it on another flight? And she said, no, we don't do that. She said, if you leave that bag, it's going in the trash. Like, oh my gosh. So we start Googling flights, and looking for other flights. When's your next flight out of here? She said, in 2 days. And it was in the season where airlines were just a wreck. I mean, they kind of still are, but a lot of cancellations. And so we, I'm just like, I don't know what we're gonna do. So we start scanning, any other flights going out, and they're everywhere from $900 to $1,400 a seat that night. And I'm like, we can't do that. Yeah, we gotta get out. I said, what other flights do you have? She said, I could get you out of Orlando. We were in Tampa at that point. So I get you out of Orlando if you can get back there tomorrow morning at 11. I'm like, that will not work. We gotta get home. So, we're like, fine, put us on there. We're not gonna take it, but put us on there anyway. So we, walk away from the counter, dejected, start going up and down the row, seeing if there's any flights we can make. There's none. Start, getting to the reality of the point that we're probably not gonna make it home. So we start looking for hotels, which there's hardly any of those as well because of all the snarled airline travel. I mean, $350, $400 a night for like a Fairfield Inn. And, and so we were just like, what are we gonna do? And it was about 8:45, we finally called our kids and like, kids, we're not gonna make it home. And our daughter had just gone back to school. She'd been staying with our kids for the weekend and she headed back not knowing we were delayed. And they were like, well, we're disappointed. We knew, we thought you were coming home. And so our younger three kids are home by themselves. And we're like, we don't even know where we're gonna stay. And so just on a whim, about 8:55, I'm like, oh my gosh, where we were staying, using some vacation points, their call center closes in 5 minutes. So I get on the phone and, it's like, do you guys have anything available? And they'd been, totally booked up for months. And she says, we've been booked for months. I get through to them and she's like, let me put you on hold. I'm like, there's not gonna be anything here. And she came back and said, hey, we've got one room. It's a studio. And like, perfect, that's all we need. So we get an Uber, pay like $150, get back to Orlando on an Uber. And the lady was so nice, Christian lady, so bright and positive. It's one of those moments though, you're not looking for bright and positive. She's like, you guys just arriving. We're like, no, we're actually supposed to be on a flight right now. We got, we missed it. She's like, oh man, you get an extra day in Florida. How amazing. And I'm like, that is not what I'm feeling right now. And so we're traveling, back toward Orlando, and she's telling us all the things we can do with our time. I'm like, I just want to get there. I just need a moment to decompress. I'm like, God, where are you in this? And we pull into our hotel and, get checked back in. And I remember going to the patio and just like talking to God about everything I was feeling. I don't know how you talk to God. I've had a few, like, God, WTF, like seriously. Like what, like where are you in this moment right now? And I know some of you are like, really? I'm like, yeah, I'm not using hyperbole right here. I mean, sometimes when I talk to God, I'm like a jolted spouse. I mean, I'm like, God, seriously, I feel like you are not even engaged right here. In fact, we did a series back earlier this year called How to Talk to God. and looked at how Jesus kind of instructed us. And there was a reason that he said, when you pray, go into your room and close the door. Right? You know, so you can pray to your Father in heaven. You can go, well, why should I close the door? Well, because sometimes if you're talking to God and you're really like being authentic with him about disappointments, like you may not want other people to see it and hear it. I certainly don't want my kids to see and hear that. But Jesus invites that. He says, you know, pray to your Father who's unseen, and then your Father who sees what is done in secret, not public, in secret, will reward you. And so Julie and I, we ordered a pizza and a couple drinks, sat on the patio and just decided, hey, there's nothing we can do. We're just going to breathe the evening in. We're going to decompress. We're going to allow ourselves to just kind of rest and get up the next day and try to make the most of it. So we do. It's a bright sunny morning. We get up. We make sure we got an Uber super early. We get to the airport on time. She's able to do some remote work. I'm able to do some remote work. For the most part, our flight goes pretty smooth. We get home back to Indy. It was so good to be home to Indianapolis. I'd never been happier to be home. And I'm still in this, God, really, like seriously, like, is this the best you could do? And so we get our car at the Indy Airport. We head to our daughter's campus at Butler University to pick up our other family car that she drove down there to take it home. My wife is going to drive that car. We're about 3 miles from campus, headed back to Fisher's, and I get a phone call from Julie. She says, Kurt, I don't think this car is going to make it home. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, it's stuttering and bouncing and rumbling, and like it's about to shut off. I don't even think I'm going to make it to the next intersection. And we're at 56 in Benford, if you're familiar with that area. And so I'm like, all right, let's pull over. Let's, you know, get off at 56. We went to 56 in Emerson. There's a speedway there on the corner. Not a good part of town, by the way. And I'm out checking fluids, you know, transmission. Everything's fine. Look at the oil. It's old. Didn't realize we missed an oil change. Kids didn't tell me. It's a little low on oil. I fill it up, start it up. Runs pretty good. I'm like, great. We're going to nurse it home. And then it starts running rough again. We do this sequence for like an hour. I call my mechanic. Can't get him. It's now 4 o'clock. I'm like, Julie, we're either going to need to call a tow truck, I can't get a hold of our mechanic, or we're going to have to nurse this thing home. And if we do that, we need to do it before the rush hour. So we decided to nurse that thing home. We didn't want to get on the highway, so we took Fall Creek Road Parkway all the way up to Fisher's. Now, if you've ever driven Fall Creek from 56 to Fisher's, unless your car is running rough, you don't realize how many hills there are. All right, I mean, it's like we're on the phone with each other. She's following me now. I'm driving the van. It's barely making it up the hill. And I look in my mirror and there's like 50 cars behind me. And I just can see them shaking their fists in my mind because they're so angry. And we're like cheering on the phone. We just got a little more. We're cheering the car on. We're getting the lights and praying that like it turns green so I don't have to like slow down. Because when you slow down, you put it in neutral and keep it running. I couldn't figure it out. 45 minutes later, we pull into our driveway. We made it. Very humbly, with my head between my legs and my tail between my legs. And again, I'm just like, God, seriously. Now, if we all had days like this, right, where things just went from bad to worse and kept unraveling. And I'm a pretty gritty person. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of difficult things, but for whatever reason, I could not find a solution in any of these moments. And it began to affect me. I mean, this day was almost the end of me. I mean, needless to say, I found myself very defeated. I felt like I've lost it, obviously. I can't figure anything out. And God, where in the world are you, by the way? I mean, I have not seen any evidence of you. I don't know if you've had moments recently where you felt that way. And if you have, I just want you to know it's okay. And so this is where the power of perspective and this idea of framing and reframing becomes so important. Because see, there's an undeniable connection between how we look at things and what we see. In fact, there's a well-known guy by the name of Roy Sutherland. He's a TEDxer. He did a bit in Athens a while back on perspective. And I was gonna kind of try to tell a story, but he tells it so well. I thought I'd just have him tell you this little scenario of what perspective does for us. Take a look at this.
What you have here is an electronic cigarette. It's something that, since it was invented a year or two ago, has given me untold happiness. A little bit of it, I think, is the nicotine, but there's something much bigger than that, which is ever since, in the UK, they banned smoking in public places, I've never enjoyed a drinks party ever again. And the reason I only worked out just the other day which is when you go to a drinks party and you stand up and you hold a glass of red wine and you talk endlessly to people, you don't actually want to spend all the time talking. It's really, really tiring. Sometimes you just want to stand there silently, alone with your thoughts. Sometimes you just want to stand in the corner and stare out of the window. Now, the problem is, when you can't smoke, if you stand and stare out of the window on your own, you're an antisocial, friendless idiot. If you stand and stare out of the window on your own with a cigarette, you're a f***ing philosopher. So the power of reframing things cannot be overstated. What we have is exactly the same thing, the same activity, but one of them makes you feel great, and the other one, with just a small change of posture, makes you feel terrible.
Isn't that fascinating? Probably shouldn't have to say this, but I'm not necessarily advocating smoking. But what a great picture. What you have in one situation is something that makes you feel great, and just a slight change in posture, something that makes you feel terrible. So this is the power of perspective. Another way to think of it, I don't know if you ever thought about it this way, that why is it that retirees are much happier than the young unemployed? Have you ever wondered that? Ever wondered, like, they're both kind of in the same situation, right? I mean, they both have a lot of time on their hands, and they both need more money. And yet retirees report being very, very happy, whereas the young unemployed report being extremely unhappy and depressed. And the reason I think retirees often in that situation believe that they're happy and feel happy is because they believe that they actually chose at that point in their life not to work, whereas the young unemployed felt like it was thrust upon them. Again, the power of perspective has a very, very fascinating effect. Daniel Pink is an author. He's an author of like 5 New York Times bestseller books. In one of his books, he talks about this experiment with 2 dogs where they put these 2 dogs in a box. And each dog had its own box, and in the base of the box was kind of an electric floor. And now, every now and then, they would actually apply electric shock to the floor. I mean, not like, you know, in a mean way, like where the dogs are, you know, but more like an electric, you know, invisible fence kind of shock. And the only difference between the 2 boxes with the dogs is one dog had a button in the corner of the box where when it nuzzled the button, the shock would actually stop, whereas the other dog didn't have that in its box. And so they were both exposed to the same level of pain or shock in those moments, and yet the one box, the dog has control, the other box, the dog does not. The box where the dog had control generally was relatively content, whereas the dog who didn't have any control was immediately depressed. Again, the power of perspective, this idea that circumstances in our lives may matter less to our contentedness. Think about this for a moment. As opposed to the sense we feel of control in a situation. This is such an interesting thing. I mean, how we view things really, really matters. One more, these are kind of fun. Maybe you've seen these before. Take a look at this photo right here. What do you see in this picture? Just shout it out. What do you see right there? A flower on what? On water, some kind of beautiful body of water, right? But when you change the perspective just slightly and a bit higher, you begin to realize this is simply a broken off branch in a puddle on a sidewalk, right? Because perspective matters. How about this one right here? What do you see right here? A guy like dangling for his life, right? Holding onto his bike, about to fall into a pit. And yet you slightly shift the perspective and you realize he's just laying on the ground. See, perspective matters. How we frame things really matters. How we look at things. It's not just what we see, but it's how we interpret it. I mean, as I think back to that 24-hour terrible, horrible, very bad day that Julie and I had, I still am kind of baffled. Like, why was I so beside myself? What was it that just kind of put me on this negative trajectory? I mean, I begin to question whether God was even with me. I mean, it's not like I really question that, but I'm like, God, seriously, I'm not seeing you at all. And I think when I boil it all down, I think it's this illusion of control that I thought that I had. Now, Jesus, this is so fascinating. Jesus, I don't know that he could have been any more clear on this. I mean, he was crystal clear when he was like building into his team. In fact, we're looking at a scene here where he was with his team, and this is one of the moments where it's near the end of his ministry. He's getting ready to return to the Father. I mean, his death and resurrection is coming. He knows that. Nobody else is coming at. They're traveling to Jerusalem. And he says to his team, he says, hey guys, listen, I've told you these things so that in me you will have peace. Meaning, I'm building into you. I'm giving you some heads up. All right, he's telling them, hey guys, some bad things are happening, going to be happening. And the guys are like, Jesus, why do you keep talking like that? I mean, come on, be positive. Quit talking that way. He's like, no, seriously, I'm trying to prepare you. He says, in this world, you're going to have trouble. I don't know that it gets any clearer than that, right? I don't know that it's any more like clearly stated. He's like, guys, you're going to have some difficult moments in this world, in your experience coming up. But take heart. Take heart, I've overcome the world. Of course, he's referring to his crucifixion that he knows is coming. And he knows that in those moments that he doesn't want his team to get derailed because things don't go the way they think that they should go. He doesn't want his team to lose faith and not see the hand of God in the midst of this moment because they're so focused on how they think it should go versus the bigger narrative of what God's doing. Because perspective is everything. It's not just what they looked at, but it's how they saw it. And so why is it, I mean, when things don't go our way? I mean, you're probably like me. I mean, we struggle, right? We struggle like, oh my gosh, where are you, God? What's going on? And I think it's because we love control. I mean, somehow we begin to make this connection that we come to expect that if things go my way, then that must be an affirmation that God is happy with me, right? But see, Jesus never promised this. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but that's not something Jesus ever said. I want to do a series sometimes on all the things we think Jesus said that he never said. All right, Jesus never said it's going to go exactly the way we want. Jesus never said it's going to be easy. Jesus never said it's going to be tension-free. He never said it's going to be smooth sailing. He never said it's going to be, you know, tension-free. Actually, what he said is you're going to have trouble. He was really, really clear. And do you remember the invitation that Jesus gave to every single person that he encountered? I mean, it started with his very first disciple that he called. It's the same invitation he gives to you and to me. And then he follows that up with a promise. Do you remember what the invitation was? It was simply, hey, will you follow me? Will you follow me? And of course, that's easy when everything's up and to the right, right? It's easy when everything's kind of going the way that we expect. Well, sure, Jesus, I'll follow you when things are going well. But what about the times when I don't see it, I don't get it, I can't understand why things are happening? When all your options seems to be closing down and you're like, man, I got out of grip, but listen, I can't come up with a solution. I feel like I'm at the end of my options. And logic is just not prevailing and I'm exhausted. Jesus says, hey, in those moments, will you still follow me? I was with Ann Smith this past week, and she said something that was so fascinating to me. She said, Kurt, I think Jesus is one of the most insecure people that ever walked this earth. And I thought, you know, she's right. She's absolutely right. I mean, at least that in how you and I think about security. I mean, he was house poor. He was food poor. He didn't have an income while he was doing his ministry. He didn't have a place to lay his head. I mean, he every day he was traveling to a new city, didn't know exactly how his needs were going to be met. I mean, his family didn't even fully believe in his identity as the Son of God. I mean, they questioned kind of what he was doing and why he was doing it. I mean, he was caught between Rome, the Roman Empire, and the synagogue, and both of them wanted him on their team. And yet he's like, hey, I'm not participating. I'm actually coming to do something entirely different. And then, of course, his team, I mean, they didn't even all believe it at certain points. I mean, you have to think he had an insecurity. And yet, he didn't allow it to cause him to not continue to follow the lead of his Heavenly Father. And so, what's the promise that Jesus gave us? I mean, he says, will you just follow me? You know, the promise wasn't, again, smooth sailing. It wasn't everything's going to work out. And see, sometimes I just think we equate this idea of, you know, if God's happy with me, then things go my way. And if they're not, then God obviously must not be happy with me. I have a friend who often talks to me about his friend who will often say things like, you know, the reason my business does so well is because of how generous I am with my church. Ooh, that's a pretty slippery slope. And that might be his experience, but I can tell you a dozen people have a different experience where they are so faithful and so generous, and life does not necessarily always go the way they want or up and to the right. But if we're honest, we may not think of our money that way, but we live our lives that way, right? We kind of live like functional atheists sometimes, myself included. I'm like, you know, God, as long as things are going my way, you must be happy with me. But when they're not, apparently you've abandoned me. You don't exist. I don't know that you're there. And so we kind of do the same thing. And so back to his promise, what was the promise? We looked at it the last weekend and the weekend before that, as we looked at the Great Commission, as Tom kind of broke out the Great Commission last weekend. It's one of the greatest things that Jesus left us with. It was this phrase right here. He said, I will be with you. He didn't say things are always going to be up and to the right. He said, you know what, but whatever you go through, I will be with you until the very end of the age, always. Think about that. Think about how powerful that one statement is right there. I will be with you, always, even when you don't feel it, even when you don't see it, even when you can't understand or comprehend or make logic out of what's happening. I mean, when I begin to rebrand and reframe Julie and my horrible, terrible, very bad day with this promise, I'll be with you always, man, I begin to see all of it so differently. And so I just want to go back through real quick and look at a couple key moments in that 24-hour period of time based on this slight change in perspective of God, not just God, where are you, but God, I do believe you're going to be with me always. We missed our flight, clearly my fault. I mean, we stayed at the pool too long. I mean, I own that. I'm like, man, I blew it. We should have left earlier. What I was trying to figure out is, did everything that came after that, was that my fault too? Or God, was that just kind of a part of the sequence? Because I know I blew certain things, but other things were totally out of my control, like the traffic and so on. But I just began this downward spiral. Now, I don't know if you've ever been there. Our flight out of Orlando, remember the one that I didn't want to book at 11 o'clock out of Orlando the next day? When we got to our hotel that night, I looked at the price of seats on that flight. They were over four times what Julie and I paid. And I thought, oh my gosh, she never charged us for the upgrade. I mean, and this airline, they charge you for everything, all right? I'm like, oh my gosh, like that would have cost us $1,000 just for the change in flight. And she didn't even bat an eye. She just put us on the flight. Oh my gosh, God, you took care of us right there. Hotel rooms, everything was booked. We couldn't find any place to stay. 5 minutes before our call center for where we have some vacation points closed, we call. Everything had been booked for weeks, and something just happened to open up, and there was a room, a studio, exactly what we needed. If we were honest, we didn't want to go home anyway. We got an extra night. We sat on the patio. We had some good conversation. We just kind of tried to enjoy the moment because that's all we could do. The next day, we get up, we get to the airport, our flight gets back, we go pick our daughter's car up from the campus, we begin driving at home. It begins to have problems 3 miles from campus. There's this little moment where we're standing there at the counter where the agent said, hey, if one of you want to take the flight home and the other one wants to stay here, we'll work with you to get you home. We just felt nudged in that moment that we needed to stay together instead of one of us going, one of us staying. If I would have sent Julie home or she would have chose to go home on that flight, Macy would have been picking her up at 12:30 in the morning, 3 miles from campus. We've been downtown Indianapolis in the middle of the night with her dad 1,000 miles away. Like, oh my gosh, God. We limped the car home. I'm like, God, seriously, I mean, when I know you probably think this is humorous, but when is this going to end? And I'm like, surely there's a solution in this. Why is the car doing this? I called my mechanic, got an appointment. I started Googling that night, found this Honda forum where somebody described the same events that my car was experiencing. And she said, I just took it to get an oil change, and apparently some of the filters got fouled up and the sensors, and it caused the car to go into this mode where the RPMs would only rise to a certain point so it wouldn't blow the engine, to protect the engine, which is exactly what our car was doing. I changed the oil that night, and it's been running fine since. I'm like, oh my gosh. See, what looked and felt like a train wreck, when I began to look through the lens of the promise, I'll be with you always, holy cow, I could see God's fingerprints all over it. It wasn't what I was expecting, but man, his fingerprints were all over it. I can't tell you how many times I've been looking back at that moment. I want to pause for a moment, and I don't know if you have something you can relate to that. I don't know if you've had a moment where things have not gone the way you planned, where your life has taken turns, where circumstances did not turn out the way, and you have no explanation for it. If you're wondering, God, where are you in this moment? But back to the question, what would I do if I woke up every single day absolutely confident that God was actually with me? I know some of us have a hard time believing that. But what if he is with us always? And what if we began to live as if that was true? Myself included. I mean, it begins to change everything. The band's going to do a song for us right here that I want you to just kind of sit under. This is a song that's been on my morning playlist every morning for the past few months. the playlist is called The Pick Me Up Ballads. In the mornings where I just need a little life breathed into me. And if you've had a moment like that, or a season, or a week, or a month, or perhaps the past year has just been, God, I don't fully know where you are. I don't fully know that I can see you in this. I just want to ask you, would you consider that perhaps that promise is true, that God is with you always? And as you think about this, I just want you to consider these words that were written by Bob Dylan a number of years ago, that perhaps this is what God would want to say to you right now. Maybe sensing as you sit under these words and this message of a God who is always with you. In fact, I want to pray for us. Heavenly Father, some of us are feeling, experiencing perhaps the breadth and the broadness of your love, and the ever-present nature of who you are right now. Maybe for the very first time, maybe we have things going through our mind, moments where we couldn't see your hand in certain things we're beginning to see. Maybe even in this moment, for the very first time, that you were with me. Perhaps things didn't go the way that I hoped, but oh my gosh, look at how you showed up in that moment. Father, for some of us, we may even be sensing that for the very first time, or the very first time in a long time. Others of us may be being drawn to you, not because of a song or anything that was said, but because you just draw us to you. And perhaps we're even at a point of wanting to say, okay, you know, okay, I'll take a step. And beginning to follow. Don't fully know what that means. But I want to follow you, Jesus. Brothers of us, we've been doing this for years, following Jesus. Maybe you've hit a rough patch, a season where you just had a hard time. You had a hard time seeing God's hand. God, thank you that we don't have all the answers. Because if we did, we'd be equivalent to you. Help us know what it means, even when things don't go the way we hope, when we can't see you in it, when we don't understand it. Help us in those moments to be willing to say, okay, I'm going to lean into this promise that you were with me, Jesus, and I'm going to trust, and I'm going to continue to lean in and continue to follow. And we thank you. We thank you that you invite us into that kind of relationship with you, Jesus. So we love you. We just pray these things according to your character, Jesus. Amen. I want us to just sit under the song for a moment longer and just kind of breathe this moment in and just allow God to continue to just kind of speak into you, kind of love, kind of care, the ever-present nature of who he is. So let's just breathe this in as Brad continues. This has all become very real to me this summer over the past few weeks as I've been off. I can't tell you how many times I've played this narrative that I've shared with you through my mind. My rest, creative hiatus. I'm so grateful to Crosspoint, to leadership for the opportunity to have that. I didn't realize how much kind of trauma, disappointment, pain, even some PTSD I'd accrued over the last few years that led me at times wonder, oh my gosh, God, where are you in the middle of all this? And just seeing his hand in this one day event, I mean, so clearly, I mean, just has been so encouraging. I hope it has been to you. And I've had a great therapist along the way that has helped me unpack and has led me to some new places of healing. All that to tell you, I'm not telling you this because it's, you know, in a book somewhere, it's just, you know, what religious people do. I'm telling you because I've experienced it. In fact, I had a chance to sit down with Ann Smith. I know many of us would love to be able to do that. I get a chance to do that every now and then, and sat down with her this past Friday. And we were talking about this, and I said, she prayed that prayer over me that I just prayed over you. God, thank you that we don't have all the answers, because if we did, we would be equal to you. And I said, Anne, I feel more insecure right now than I think I ever have in my life, at least in the last 10 years. And you know what she did? She put her hands up. She's like, thank you. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm like, I don't have the same response that you do, Anne. I do not fully feel that way. She said, that's a wonderful place to be, because you now are in a posture where you're more intently and faithfully ready to follow. I'm like, all right, I'll trust you. And you might be saying, you know, that's a pretty vulnerable place to be, which it is, which kind of brings it full circle. She shared with me three things that I want to pass on to you. She said, there are three benefits of vulnerability. She said, number one, when we're vulnerable, we don't have to use our energy hiding any longer. We don't have to give this, you know, posture that we got it together, we're doing fine, everything's fine. There's a lot of energy spent there. She's like, you can use it for creativity and things that bring life. Number two, it sets other people free. I mean, when you're vulnerable and you want to say, okay, man, I'm in process, I'm working, I'm growing, I'm continuing to grow and learn what it means to trust. When you're vulnerable about that, it actually lets other people do the same. And then here's where it kind of comes full circle on so many of the themes we've talked about over the summer. The third thing it does is it gives witness to a believable faith. You know, we've been talking a lot over the last few weeks about what it means to make everyday disciples, to go love, serve. And some of us are like, what does that mean? I mean, I don't know if I can go out and I can help other people see what it means to follow God. Well, this is where it starts. It starts with vulnerability of going, oh my gosh, in those moments when God, I didn't know I was gonna go. I couldn't understand. I was angry. I don't even know if I fully trusted all the time, but I leaned in. I said, okay, I'm gonna follow even when I can't see it. That gives witness to a believable faith. That's not smoke and mirrors. And that helps other people see what it means to follow and trust Jesus. And there's a teaching moment in that, and what it means to obey or to fall into a sense of trusting Jesus as a Savior. And then as Jesus says, just as a reminder, hey, and I'm going to be with you always. Man, what a great, great thing to be left with. And so we're going to leave you with something this weekend. If you want to take out your phones, your devices, if you're at home, you can check into the connection card. Once you open the connection card up, there's a link there right under the next steps. And we've given you two kind of home screen backgrounds. I mean, if this has landed and you're like, okay, I need to be thinking of how do I change my perspective? There's two backgrounds there based on the things we've talked about. One of them is just, I will be with you always. The other is the full Great Commission and how in the midst of us being vulnerable and using the way God works in our lives, we actually show others. If you need something to be a reminder this week so you can do this, I encourage you to just click that link, download those. They're free. They're available for you. We want you to walk away with some reminder because I'm telling you, it just the slightest change in perspective can change everything. And as you're doing that, we're going to close with what's become one of my favorite songs. And there's a phrase in the song that I just, every time we sing it, I just kind of get chills and goosebumps. And so I want you to go ahead and stand with us. The lyrics say this. They say, far be it from me to not believe, even when my eyes can't see. And this mountain that's in front of me, I don't know if anybody's got a mountain they're feeling in front of them right now. What's been coming to your mind as we've been talking, something that just seems insurmountable, that you're never going to get through it. There's never going to be an opening. You're always going to be facing this thing. You're in a hole with no light. I don't know what that is for you. This is, and this mountain that's in front of me will be thrown into the midst of the sea. Think about that for a moment. This is a God who is always with us. It may or may not go the way you plan. It may or may not go the way you hope. But he says, hey, I'm going to be with you. And that mountain's gonna be thrown in the sea. How would you respond in that moment if that mountain, that thing you're facing right now that's on the front of your mind, just tomorrow was gone? Like, what would you do? Would you be like cheering, high-fiving? You'd be like, woo, yes. Listen, I want you to have that kind of anticipation as we sing this. When we get to that moment, I don't know what that means for you. I don't know if that's just be like, yes, God. Or if you wanna be like, woo, yes, I want that. I wanna claim that right there. But as we sing, I hope you'll make this your prayer. And this is my prayer for you as this song starts. Father, my eyes, keep my eyes on you. Regardless of what comes, keep my eyes on you. So let's sing this together.